2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined on the phone today by Baseball Hall of Famer Tracy Ringlesby. Tracy is the godfather of Baseball America. He's been doing this longer than I've been alive, and it's kind of an honor to call him a colleague now. Tracy, you've covered the Rockies, obviously, for a very, very long time. You've been a part of Baseball America for a very, very long time. Naturally, you put together the Rockies top 30 for us this year. But before we dive into the system, I want to talk to you about the big picture. Rockies have made the postseason now 2 years in a row for the first time in franchise history. I wrote the article last year. They had the most homegrown players of any postseason team last year, 14 of them. This has been a really, really impressive player development apparatus that, just to be frank, has led to, thus far, the greatest run of sustained success in Rockies history. They did have a postseason appearances in 07, 09, but this was the first time they've gone back-to-back, and you look again ahead, and it should be right back in the thick of it this coming season. When you just look at the Rockies organization as a whole, major league team, the farm system, is this the healthiest it's ever been?
I think it is. I think it's healthier than a lot of organizations in reality, because you have so many people who are all basically on the same page, the same work together. And when you have a guy like Billy Schmidt, and when you have a guy like Jeff Bradich, Zach Wilson, those guys, they really don't have egos. Billy Schmidt might be the most unquoted scouting director in the game, but he's old school. He doesn't talk to people. He says, if I talk to somebody, why should I help them? Because I want to get the player. I want to get the Charlie Blackman because Danny Montgomery finds him when nobody else can. And, he says, those are the things that are going to set us apart. And so I think there's also a feeling among each other that, when they go to the minor leagues, Billy comes in, he looks at guys, he talks to kids, and he knows the kids from early on, and he can give them a little more, he can help keep the things moving forward, and another guy that, probably the most perfect guy that of recent times that people can identify with, where he just really trusted a scout, was on the Levine kid out of Connecticut, right? No high school kid gets drafted out of Connecticut.
New Hampshire,
I'm sorry.
Rare kids who get drafted out of Connecticut, but New Hampshire is especially rare, correct?
Yeah, and there's never been a high school draft position player make it from that state to the big leagues. And they still like Levine, and a lot of people kept saying, you don't really have a good vision of what he's capable of doing because of competition. And the kid went to the Pioneer League, and look at what he did. I mean, he walked more than he struck out. Just in that alone for a young player, I think, signifies, in addition to the power, in addition to what a good defensive player he is. I mean, it's trusting the people around you, not feeling like you have to be the final authority on everything, but trusting the decisions. And I think that goes into the farm system as they rotate players. I mean, you've got a kid like McMahon who was signed as a first baseman, very high draft pick, got moved over to play some first base, and now he's going to be in the battle this spring for the starting second base job with the Rockies. And that's because in the minor leagues, they move guys around. If they're the athletic enough, they want to see where they can do at different positions, because you don't know what job's going to open up. I mean, third base right now, they're hoping it doesn't open up for another 10 years if they can get Arenado signed. And so you want to make sure you're good players, that you have positions that they can play.
I think a lot of times when there's a success, people quote the scouts at the amateur level and then say, they did a great job identifying them, and then they were big leaguers. And there's no question that plays a huge part of it, but the player development apparatus in between is absolutely crucial. And and one of the things I've learned from this job is there's been more careers I've seen waylaid by poor player development than I think the public realizes. More than just, that guy just wasn't very good, or he was a bust or whatever. A lot of times, just organizations don't do the right things with kids. And I've been really impressed with the Rockies. As you know, we travel around, we're everywhere, and we definitely see some organizations, you know, how hands-on they are and what the instruction they're giving is. And just in my travels, I've been very impressed with the Rockies in general. Zach Wilson, the farm director, I've seen him in Asheville, I've seen him in Lancaster. He's kind of everywhere, and you know, it sounds like that's run-of-the-mill, but there's some farm directors you never really see. There's always seems to be a really good, you know, sense of, hey, you know, we're invested in these guys, we're invested in their success, and I think a lot of organizations pay lip service to that, but just in my first-person experience, I've found the Rockies to be one of the best when it comes to actually, you know, putting their actions and their money where their mouth is in that regard with player development.
Well, I think they are now. They went through a period when Bill Guyvette was here where they were changing pitchers their first day in extended spring training who they drafted. They were changing their entire mechanics. And they had a lot of high picks that were well thought of that never came forward. And I think that was a lot about it. And, you know, now with the new regime, they're at that mentality. It's sort of an old school mentality. It was the Hal Keller, Sandy Johnson thought process. You do not touch a player their first year in the minor leagues, no matter what, because they're successful, or you wouldn't have drafted them. So the minute you start to change them before they have had any type of failure, it's easy to say that you're the reason they failed, right? You understand what I'm saying? And so Keller's thing was, until a guy struggles, you don't mess with him. He said, you know, there are guys that are unorthodox players. Ruben Sierra was a great hitter when he had a big high leg lift. But if you stop the video, his hands met the ball at the same place George Brett's hands met the ball. But when Ruben went to Oakland, Tony La Russa became intent on taking his leg kick away from him. Okay, Hal Keller and I would talk about things, and he'd say, yeah, you know, people say you can't hit when you wrap the bat. Nobody was ever able to explain that to Julio Franco. At 39, he was still wrapping the bat. You can't do things and take natural things away from a guy until they have enough failure that they're going to embrace what you try to do. When I covered the Angels in the 70s, Frank Tanana was maybe the best left-handed pitcher I've ever seen. And then Billy Muffet decided, well, he throws a little across his body. I'm going to change him. I'm going to get him where he's more direct like you're supposed to be. Well, Frankie was 27 years old. He'd thrown across his body his entire life. And all of a sudden now you're trying to change his muscle structure. No wonder he hurt his arm.
There's no question. No, the Rockies have definitely corrected some of the issues that were plaguing them earlier. You can see that in their successful pitcher development. I discussed that with Zach Wilson on a podcast late last year. But diving forward, we've seen the Rockies have a really large run of homegrown successes from, you know, Trevor Story, Nolan Arenado, we mentioned all those pitchers, and Kyle Freeland, Antonio Sensatella. We've started to see, you know, kind of a next wave come up. David Dahl struggled to stay healthy, but he's up. Ramel Tapia has come up. Ryan McMahon has come up. And there's another group. You look at the top of this Rockies list, it's a lot of guys in the upper minors. Brendan Rodgers, Garrett Hampson made his major league debut last year. Peter Lambert was in AAA. He's on the cusp. When you were putting together this system, Brendan Rodgers is kind of the no questions asked number one. But you mentioned in your chat numbers 2 through 5. We're all kind of in the same tier. Ultimately, how is that sorting out process, and how close are they really? It seems like there's almost no clear number two. All four of those guys have a case for being number two.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I just think, you know, obviously Levine is farther away because he just got drafted last year. Probably the guy that didn't get the attention he needed, if I look back at it, is probably Tyler Nevin, because he finally was healthy last year, and he had a good year. But I think more than that, when he went to the Fall League, he won the batting title coming out of A-ball. And, you know, there's a lot of pitchers and position players that were much more experienced than him. And I think that really got people excited, is that, like, you know, this is a kid. As he settles in, you know, he'll probably wind up a corner infielder, but he could play on the corner in the outfield too, which is what the Rockies like, again, because of versatility. But, you know, he's the Levine kid. It's hard to overlook a high school kid. I know it was rookie ball, but it's hard to overlook a high school kid who can go in his first professional year and have the type of season he had, where he established right away that he was a legitimate player. I mean, 350 is 350. The home runs, the RBIs, again, more walks, 50, 45 walks to 40 strikeouts. That's a pretty good ratio for a young kid. And so you have those tools. Lambert's just, you know, he's not going to do anything that's just going to say, wow. He's just going to make pitches. He's going to hit spots. He's going to get people out. And I think, you know, for him, that trip up to Albuquerque at the end of last year was really good because it gave him a chance to assess, okay, what do I have to do now for my next step to grow here? And that's one of the reasons they're in Albuquerque. You know, they're in Colorado Springs, and people say, well, you know, the altitude. Well, no. Colorado Springs, their ballpark was about 1,200 feet higher than Coors Field. Albuquerque is the same altitude as Denver. And that was part of the thought process that Jeff had when they made that move, when he was a minor league director, was, you know, this is going to give us a much better venue to evaluate what we think about these players coming to Denver to play, and also to give them a much better feel for what Coors Field is going to be like instead of scaring them, you know. And I was talking with Jeff last night, we were laughing about the fact that Pete Vukovich pitched here in 75 for the White Sox AAA team. I was the UPI guy in Denver, and I was teasing him because he had a great year here, got called up, and he told Roland Heeman he'd only go up if Roland would let him come back so he could pitch in the playoffs for the Bears because he left Denver. He goes, yeah, it wasn't until the Rockies came that I found out I couldn't pitch there. You know, it's guys pitched here for years. Bert Hooten was pretty famous for the knuckle curve, right? You know where he learned it? Pitching for the Boulder Collegians for Baldy Machete with, and he learned the knuckle curve because that was the big pitch that all the pitchers who have come out of Colorado since Goose Gossage, other than Danny Jackson, they all learned the knuckle curve from a guy named Bus Campbell. And so it was more trying to get rid of the hysteria and get people to realize it. And now they have a staff that's comfortable with it. And they have a bullpen coach who says, look, I pitched for 5 years before the humidor with a curveball. And Kyle Freeland's like, well, this is where I grew up. I mean, he was born five miles from Mile High Stadium less than 3 weeks after the Rockies played their first game ever. And so he's like, this is where I pitched my whole life until I went to Evansville. It's not like I'm in strange territory. And he sets the pace for everybody else. Because, you know what, he goes, I have a 2.40 ERA at Coors Field. You're going to tell him you can't pitch there?
There's definitely been a lot of progress made. You mentioned mostly, you know, talking to Zach Wilson a lot, but was finding the right makeup. And I want to hit on Lambert a little bit here because, you know, that's one of the things that stands out about him. You have him as the top-rated pitcher in this farm system, and it was pretty clear that's the case. You know, it's not just Albuquerque. They start him in Grand Junction. They move to Asheville, then they move to Lancaster now. All very, very big hitters' parks. And so these pitchers get thrown right in off the deep end. And one of the things that was impressive about Lambert, when I saw him in Lancaster 2 years ago, this is a guy, nothing fazes him. He was a big-time pitcher in Southern California, pitching against some of the best there. And just pitching in Lancaster as a 20-year-old, you see a lot of guys who do get frustrated, who do... They give up what should be a lazy fly ball, and it's a three-run homer, and all of a sudden their ERA is inflated, and they can't quite get over it. And Peter Lambert was one of the most impressive guys I saw, just ice in his veins, and it was really, really impressive. He went up to Double-A Hartford, and a lot of managers up there actually thought he was the best pitching prospect in that league with the best tools ballot. And we look on paper, and we see the Albuquerque numbers last year were not great, but as I was making calls around for the Pacific Coast League top 20 prospects, more than a few managers said, hey, that kid's got a good arm. He knows how to execute all his pitches. Nothing fazes him. There was a real serious consideration for him, you know, even though it was not a great season on paper, to be a really, really, you know, solid pitcher at the big league level. There's a lot to like there, and I think a lot of it, you know, again, I just go back to that discussion I had with Zach Wilson. So much about what the Rockies are doing with their scouting is that makeup, getting over the quote-unquote hysteria, as you called it. And Peter Lambert is a guy that's kind of wired that way, and one of the reasons why I think a lot of people expect him to have success, even those who don't see a huge, huge ceiling there. They think he'll execute enough, stay poised enough, to end up being successful, you know, probably as a number four or five starter in the Rockies rotation. But as you know, you don't win ball games without a solid number four or five.
Yeah, and I think he gets pushed back to that type of a category more because he's not an overpowering guy. He's more of a pitcher. We've become a society now that gets so caught up in numbers that we sometimes get away from the human element that's involved and the competitiveness that's within an individual. And I just think, you know, that's why I say, like, I think probably the best thing that could have ever happened to Lambert was to go to Albuquerque and not put up the big numbers that he's used to putting up. Because now, as a competitor, as a guy that knows he's good, in his mind, he knows he's good enough to get those guys out. Now it gives him something over the offseason that go back, look at, okay, what can I do differently? How do I approach this the next time? And, I mean, I think it was really an important step in his career. You know, Hal Keller, the late Hal Keller, one of my favorite people ever in scouting, he used to always say that, I can never tell you if a player's any good until I see him fail.
Moving beyond Lambert, again, Brendan Rodgers, clear-cut number one prospect in the system, a guy that can play second, can play short, can play third, is going to project a hit everywhere. Wherever the Rockies need him, he'll perform. Garrett Hampson's an interesting guy. He came in at number two in this system on the final cut. And I saw him at Lancaster, not knowing a lot about him. And I'm watching him, and this guy is twitchy. He's athletic as heck. He can fly. I saw him hit every velocity, every kind of breaking pitch. And then, you know, he's kind of gets put in this bucket of, you know, small overachiever when you look at his frame, but you look at him, he's not, and I've been trying to pound the table on this for years. This guy's an incredible athlete. He's a 70-grade runner, and if you go on the MLB sprint speeds, you'll see he's actually one of the fastest players in the majors last year. The hand-eye coordination, the reflexes, he's actually an elite athlete just in a smaller package. We saw a little bit of that last year. As of right now, he's in position to play a lot of second base for the Rockies this coming season. Him and Ryan McMahon are going to bounce around and share that role a little bit. But I think there's an overwhelming sense that Garrett Hampson is going to, you know, not just be in the big leagues, but do a lot of things to help your team win. In your discussions with people within the system, what was the overall sense on his role? Because I still find some opposing scouts who are hesitant to make him anything more than a utility guy. But the more he keeps playing, the more it's like, no, this guy can play an everyday second base in the major leagues.
Yeah, well, nobody thought LeMahieu could play at second base because he was too tall, right? I know LeMahieu became the tallest everyday second baseman in major league history to play over 100 games in a season. But he had an instinct for the game and athleticism, and I think Hampson, it's a different type of a situation. He's not maybe as big as some people want him to be, but he does have a great feel for the game. He does understand. He understands what his tools play well to. You know, he's not trying to hit home runs. He wants to get extra base hits. He wants to steal bases. He realizes those are the positives that he can bring to the table. You know, he might not ever be that big time everyday guy. But with his athletic ability, his speed and his skills, the fact he can play center field, he can play shortstop, he can play second base, and I think second base probably is his best position, he's going to play a lot of games every year. He's going to play 120, 130 games every year, which nowadays is a full season, right? I mean, it's guys don't play 162 games anymore because that's not allowed. And so, I mean, I think he's going to be an everyday player. He just may not have an everyday position.
He's definitely going to be an interesting guy to watch moving forward. Again, he made his major league debut last year. Rodgers is in line to make his this year. The guy that kind of came, you know, beyond them along with Lambert was Colton Welker. Welker's an interesting guy. He would have won the South Atlantic League batting title had he stayed healthy and had enough games to qualify for it in his first full season. Went out and won the California League batting title last year. Really interesting hand-eye coordination. The swing, it's a little funky. It's a little bit of a flat path that doesn't really get the ball in the air. So there is some question about the power, but he showed hands for third base. You see guys making a lot of contact, and the track record keeps building and building. I know more than a few scouts want to wait until he gets to Hartford, which is more of a hitting neutral environment, before they fully buy in. But to date right now, there's nothing you can really bang him on. You know, I know in some of your conversations, Welker could have been as high as number two in this system. He ultimately finished number four, but there's some who felt he was the second best prospect in the system behind only Rodgers. Just kind of what's your assessment of Colton Welker and your discussions with people inside and outside the organization?
I mean, I think you have to look at the overall abilities of a guy and his approach and his ability to make contact, his ability to drive the ball in gaps, and realize, you know, there's a couple of things that happen. Is one, as you get older, you get stronger, you get more experience. If you study, you start to understand tendencies more. I think that, you know, what you want to do when you look at a young player is you want to look at their skill base and not necessarily get carried away with the overall numbers that are involved, but more with their aptitude, their physical abilities, and what you can see, even in batting practice, to see the type of power they have.
That's all very fair, and that's, you know, again, some of the reasons to be bullish on Welker as he continues to grow. You know, we've talked about Grant Levine a little bit. It feels like that top five were pretty set in stone. You know, you hit on Tyler Nevin even with his fall league, a pretty safe number six. The 7 to 10 range is where I think there's probably a little bit of a drop-off. Again, the top six are the top six. When you were kind of assessing the next group, I guess I would ask, you know, how many guys were really in contention to be top 10 prospects? Were there 11 guys? Were there 12 guys? Like, how many guys were surefire top 10 prospects, and how many other guys were kind of in contention for the back half of that?
I would say there were probably at least eight guys minimum, if not 10, that I kind of filtered around with, trying to figure out just exactly where they would really fit in the overall picture. And it was, I think they all were guys that you could make strong cases for, and then you just have to kind of slowly work your way through looking at things. I mean, like one guy that I think a lot of people overlooked because he didn't have a big year last year was Hilliard.
Yep. Personal favorite of mine. I've seen him 2 years in a row now, and
you know,
the dude
can
play.
Lou Gehrig's disease last year, and he had a major distraction in his life because his dad was a very big part of his life, and this is a kid that was a pitcher until his junior year at Wichita State, when he was such a bad pitcher they let him hit. But you know, it was a year that wasn't quite what he wanted it to be, but they really felt like he was very close with his parents, and the thing with his dad really hit him hard. And, you know, I think we saw him come back in the fall league, and he had a very solid fall league. I mean, all their hitters had good fall leagues, really, but, you know, he was very comfortable in that environment, and he's got a great personality. He's got a good student of the game, and I think people will be surprised. I think you'll see him bounce back big from last year when he was more ordinary in terms of numbers. But for the people that were around him, he was far from that. It's, you know, it's another great scouting story because, as Brett Baldwin said, you know, if I hadn't been a first-year scout, I probably wouldn't have been that high on him. But I didn't know better because all the other scouts said, oh, he was a pitching prospect. And they all got off him real quick because he had such a horrible, you know, year pitching at Wichita State, and he goes, I kept watching the guy hit. I didn't realize I was supposed to be watching a pitcher.
Yep. No, you're right. That is a great scouting story, and he is a good player. You know, I tweeted this out that there's a lot of other systems that have bigger names than the Rockies, but when I watch the Rockies guys, they can all play, sometimes a lot better than a lot of these other big-name guys, and I think, again, that goes back to the player development. There is one person on this list who just has not been able to get off the ground, had a shoulder injury followed by an oblique injury last year, and has yet to really experience much success on the mound at any level, and that's Riley Pint. Remains a top 10 prospect. Obviously, the Rockies internally are still saying all the right things. Externally, it just, you know, has not been good when he has pitched, but bigger guy, still young, there's still some explosive stuff in there. How would you kind of assess where Riley Pint is right now?
Well, I think the big thing with Riley has been his approach and his attitude when he's gone to work. There hasn't, and I think that's what makes the Rockies feel so confident about him, because they're around him and they see the drive that he has to be successful. And, you know, he's got to throw more strikes, right? I mean, that's not a secret to anybody. And he's got the power arm, and he's got the desire, and the aptitude has been slowed. You don't know about, because it's been slowed by the injury problems. And I think, you know, this is a huge year for him to finally make a statement. I mean, they really have two pitchers in the organization that are really very similar in that regard, and Mike Nikoric is the other one that. They have a lot of belief in the abilities of those two kids, and they've had a lot of problems physically been able to get out on the mound on a regular basis. And I think both of them this year need to be more consistent on the mound to begin with, and then in the pitching, obviously. But you know, the hope, particularly with Riley, is that, you know, once he gets on the mound on a consistent basis and starts to put together the different things that the Bob Apodacas and those people have worked with him on, that he has a chance to come quickly once things get into place. But it's been a little frustrating waiting and watching for him to be healthy enough to go out and be able to do it. But, I mean, this is a guy, if you talk to people in their system, they feel he's got the best fastball and the best curveball in the organization, and possibly the best changeup. So it's not like the physical skills aren't there. It's just been the health issue. And Nikoric's in pretty much the same, a very similar type situation.
And this will be Riley Pine's fourth professional season, and seeing if he can make some progress and start moving up the ladder, staying on the mound, I think will be kind of one of the subplots of the Rockies minor league season, if you will. Tracy, before we let you go here, just to wrap up, overall, when you assess this Rockies system, what's your overall take on it, both from the talent level and when this group will be ready to impact the major league club, which at the end of the day is all that matters?
Yeah, well, I think there's a group of position players that are at that point right now. And they're coming along and they're getting attention because the pitchers have made the move. The Marquezes and the Freelands and the Obergs. You know, those guys have made that move to the big league level now, and people are saying, well, they don't have the pitching depth. Well, they do. They got a really young rotation.
Right. They're all in the big leagues. The lack of pitching depth in the minor leagues, it's for the right reasons. It's because they graduated five or six homegrown guys.
And they were impact, and they've been impact guys. You know, they're not guys that, you know, Marquez and, Marquez came over from
Tampa Bay, but they acquired him when he had not pitched above A ball. And in a lot of ways, he is a guy they consider to be one of their own.
And Cincitella, and, you know, Gray, everyone's disappointed. He was 14-6 last year. He, you know, I think he was more disappointed, too. I mean, he wasn't the number one or two guy, but they had enough strong pitching. He didn't have to be. He was the number three guy. And he's got to get to, you know, to be more consistent. But, you know, I think they feel good because now they feel the next way they're going to get will be a reinforcement in the position players. And then, you know, then see what happens after that with the pitching that comes along. I mean, there's arms in the system, and they just got to see how they're going to develop. If, you know, Pint is the type of guy, as silly as it may sound, if he gets command, he could be up in the big leagues in no time, right? I mean, he's got the makings of the stuff to be a dominant type guy, and if, as the strikes come, if he's healthy and he goes out and he pitches and he stays in a routine, he's not a guy that's going to take a long time to get there because he can just simply overpower people. I mean, when you sit from 98 to 101 as a starting pitcher, that's pretty good.
I'd say so. There's no question. Again, the pitching's up. We've seen some position players come up. There's more on the way. And I definitely think you can look at the Rockies right now, and obviously there is present success with back-to-back postseason appearances, and it's not hard to see that success being sustainable in the NL West over the next few years. Tracy, thank you again for coming on the podcast with us, and as always, for all your hard work at Baseball America, we appreciate everything you do.
You got it. And I appreciate everything you guys do. It's fun to watch the continued growth of the magazine.
Absolutely. Well, everybody, that'll wrap up another Baseball America Prospects podcast. For Hall of Famer Tracy Ringlesby, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thank you for listening.